As you know, Building Remote Teams is a brand new podcast. And to celebrate our launch, we have some really awesome discounts to give you from some of our favorite tools for remote teams. We have discount tools for 1Password, Donut, Hey Taco, Carrot, Birthday Bot, Karma Bot, and a ton more. All you need to do is to go to buildingremoteteams.com and subscribe with your email. You'll get a link to the page with all of the recommended tools and discounts that I mentioned above. Now, on to the show. When hiring people internationally, it's not always straightforward to know if you should hire them on a contract and they just invoice you, or if you should hire them as like proper employees. And so I had Tim Burgess from Shield Geo on the podcast today, and we talk about it. We talk about the pros and cons of each and how it's actually possible to employ people internationally. So let's listen in. Hey everyone, welcome back to Building Remote Teams. I'm here with Tim Burgess from Shield Geo, and he is in Australia. Wow, welcome Tim.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Awesome, thanks. So he is, at the end of this podcast, he's about to get his kids ready for school, and I'm getting my kids off the bus from school. Like this is true opposite ends of the world remote life. And this is I love it. This is amazing. So Tim, yeah, welcome. Thank you for coming on the show. Tell us a little bit about, you've got this thing called Shield Geo. I've looked at the webpage a couple of times trying to sort through, how I should hire people or how I should recommend how other people should hire remote people. Tell us a little bit about the story of what led you to create Shield Geo.
Okay. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on here, Jevon. It's a great privilege, and I'm really excited about the conversation. So Shield Geo came about because, I mean, I've been involved with international employment in some fashion basically my whole career. So, my first job was working as a recruiter, and I was helping move AS400 mid-range computing developers from Australia and the UK and the USA between those three locations.
Like physically they would geographically?
Yeah, they would relocate. The internet was not so strong back then.
Sure.
And then a few years back, we had a business, myself and the other founder of Shield, Duncan McIntosh, is the third business we've done together. And we had a business helping contractors find payment solutions for when they were working internationally. So that business is called contractortaxation.com. It's still going. But we were getting corporate inquiries. So companies would come to us and say, look, I've got this problem. It's not a contractor, but I need a way to get this person paid. Can you help? And so we had a network of partners around the world. We would introduce them to those partners, and nothing would ever happen. And we couldn't quite work out why until one day one of the companies said to us, look, I like the idea of the service, but the company you've introduced me to, I'm not 100% comfortable with them. It's been difficult to communicate with them. If I could deal with you guys, I'd be happy. And, that was like a light bulb moment.
Sure. And this was just what? So do payroll? Like what was the scope of what they were trying to do?
That's the interesting thing is that companies, particularly the companies that we deal with, are very much focused around employment and compliance. So, typically for them, contracting is not a big part of what they do. And when they hire somebody or when they bring somebody on, they want them to be employed. They want them to have all of the benefits and rights that employees do as opposed to contractors, so things like healthcare, social security, vacation and holiday, sick leave. And so they were looking for a solution that could provide that. Now, what we realized was that a lot of our partners could in theory provide that, but they were focused around contracting, which meant the language that they used, their view of things like benefits and administration wasn't very sophisticated. And so Shield effectively was born as a service layer that exists between these providers who have the technical capability to employ and payroll someone in a particular country and clients who want that to, as closely as possible, mirror their expectations based on the countries they're already in.
Sure. So you'd have the same experience working in the US, Australia, as you would in Nigeria.
Kind of. Yeah. It's always going to be different. But one of the difficulties is, I think, particularly for companies, is trying to understand what is different. Sometimes those expectations are so deeply embedded that you don't even expect that the rest of the world will be different. Particularly for some American companies where their employment model is very unique. It doesn't really translate to anywhere else.
Wait, what? Like, in what way?
Well, so a significant percentage of American employees don't have an employment contract at all. They might have a...
Oh, so they just go to work and they start?
Yeah. Or, they might just have a... Work? They might have a letter. Oh. They might not even have a piece of paper. And the concept of at-will employment, that at any time for any reason, as long as it's not clearly discriminatory, the employer can terminate the employment, or the employee can. And that to give 2 weeks' notice mm-hmm. is a kindness, you know, like a thing you do if you're being really nice and you want to maintain good relations. That doesn't exist anywhere else.
What? So what is it? What's the normal thing? That's the where the U.S. is maybe the odd one out. I'm in Canada.
Yeah,
so
the normal thing is that the employee or the employer has to give notice. You know, you have to give advance warning that you're going to leave a job. And then the period of time differs from country to country. But furthermore, in a lot of countries, particularly countries that are more sort of socialist leaning, there are restrictions on how you can and cannot end employment, particularly from the employer side. You know, if you think about countries like France you know, Brazil, then there are very distinct circumstances when you can say that, okay, I don't need this employee anymore. And so it becomes very difficult for things like, you know, if you're trying to manage performance, if you're trying to justify it like as an economic redundancy, the local requirements might be quite alien.
Wow. Huh. That's very interesting. Okay. So how you create, so getting back to how you created Shield Geo, you had these clients, they were trying to, you know, get things compliant to hire these employees around the world. And they just said they wanted to work with you.
So basically we set the company up where we would act in the middle. So we have a network of partners around the world. Companies come to us and say, I'll give you a typical example. It would be an American company, you know, generally not remote first, you know, generally they sort of saturate the US market, you know, could be selling anything or creating anything. You know, we've got one company makes water slides. Another company is the world's best manufacturer of quality paper. Yeah. One of our biggest clients is Techstars, the tech incubator. And so they'll say, oh, look, we want to hire somebody in Japan. We want to hire a local Japanese person in Japan, but we don't have an entity there. We don't have a corporate entity that allows us to employ. We don't want to set one up for one person at this point in time for whatever reason. And so they use us. And what we do is we take the person that they've selected, we employ and payroll them in Japan through our partner, and we manage that whole process. So we make sure that the employment is compliant, that they're respecting all of the local conditions. We try as much as possible to accommodate any particular requirements that the client has. You know, sometimes they'll have like a global leave policy, or they'll want to pay everybody a particular type of benefit. So we help them administer that, and we try and stay in the background, you know. So from a day-to-day basis, we're not involved at all. The client and the employee just act 100% as though they're employed directly, but the name on their payslip is our partner's name.
Very cool. But this has not been a new idea. Once I started digging into this a little bit, I guess are these called professional employment organizations or
PEO.
Something? And the reason PEO. So is this the same or is something different in that you're helping people?
Well, it's a great question. So the PEO model is US originated. And the reason why it started in the US is because every state is slightly different. So it's not like having 50 countries, but it's definitely not like having one country. And so the issue that American employers faced, and I believe this happened fairly early on, is that if you're a California-based company, and you've got employees in Washington State and New York State, you have to register as an employee in those states, and you have to make state-based contributions like state unemployment insurance. You might have to pay state payroll taxes. And sometimes those states have different requirements around when people need to be paid or how frequently, how leave should be administered, and so on. And so the PEO model sprang up to address that. So you can be an employer in California. You can have employees in a bunch of different states, and the PEO will act as a co-employer, which means it will handle the state-based registrations, but you still have some obligations as the employer. So the way the PEO model works is you have to be in the country or in that state in some respect, but they handle most of the administration related to payroll. And so that's an important distinction because, for example, it means you still have to have an entity in PEO and you still have to carry insurance. Now, in our model, and that's why we call it GEO.
Okay, because it's related.
Yeah, it's related, but in our model, you don't have to have an entity. We carry all of the local compliance.
I see.
But we do share some of the responsibility under contract.
Got it. Okay. Complicated stuff. To be honest, my ears were glazing over a little bit as you're talking there, but I mean, this is important stuff, but things that, you know, like I've certainly employed people around the world for different periods of time. And it's certainly like, it's a daunting thing. In my case and in my client's case, and even when I was an employee in some places, like it was just easier to say, hey, okay, you're in Poland and we're just going to pay you. We agree on a rate, like either a daily rate or a weekly rate. And you just invoice us and we're just going to pay you. And they could be employed or maybe not employed technically for years in this way. And it certainly feels easier. So,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, is that the best way to go? You know, am I going to get in trouble or like, what's the alternative? I mean,
well, so look, this is the thing. You know, I've come from that contractor background, and even with our staff, we've got 35 people in 9 countries, I think it is. And most of our people are employed. Most of our people are employed through our own entities. Some are employed through our partners. So, you know, basically dog fooding the service that we provide. And we have some people who we engage as contractors. So, you know, I'm not a zealot who's going to say there's only one model or any other, but over time, and particularly at scale, the employee model is the safest model. And so what happens typically is companies over time, and particularly as they grow, eventually you'll run into some issues with contracting. And at
like
some
what,
point,
for example, what are some issues with having maybe someone as a contractor?
So you might have issues around, so if it's in a domestic market, maybe there are issues around, you know, retention or around employee engagement or intellectual property protection. If it's in an international
because they're not
market,
like, they're not an employee, so maybe they don't like, they're just a contractor, so they don't feel the same as the employees maybe near shore. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So, and sometimes, you know, particularly in domestic markets, sometimes you have to pay more to someone as a contractor than employee, because they're like, well, I don't get the job security. I'm not getting health insurance, so I'm going to charge a bit more. In international markets, the main issue is around misclassification. And so basically local governments, and this varies widely from country to country, but typically local governments want people who are doing work as an employee to be treated as an employee. They want them to be paying income tax. They want them to be making social security contributions. They want to know that they have some sort of retirement provision. And most importantly, they want to know that they're being employed, if they're employees, in compliance with the local labor regulations. Now, that's great in principle. But, you know, if you think about, like, you gave the example of one person in Poland, you know, if it's one person in Poland working from home, you know, working purely online, who's going to catch that person? You know, like how's someone going to identify that this is happening? And that's a risk that, to be honest, I don't spend a lot of time evaluating. You know, there is a risk. You know, there are potentially, you know, countries monitor financial transactions in and out. So they may look at, you know, where people's money's coming from and why it's coming to them. The most likely scenario is that there'll be some sort of tax audit.
Oh, I see.
So,
like, hey, you know, guy in Poland, you get all these international wire transfers. We just want to go and make sure everything's in order for your taxes.
Yeah. Or we notice that you keep getting, you know, $1,500 every month from this one place. What's going on with that? Because it's the same amount of money every month. You know, where's that coming from? Nice. Or when the relationship, I mean, the other big risk is if the relationship separates and it separates badly, and the person turns around and says, well, okay, you fired me. I didn't like that happening and didn't like the way you did it. And I feel that I'm entitled to some compensation. And in my country,
oh, wow.
When you get fired, this is the sort of compensation I get.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. So they could go into the government and say, hey, I was actually an employee for this company, not just a contractor, because I was there for, you know, a year or two, and I should be getting some severance because they fired me and they didn't do it. And the government can go and figure that out.
Yeah. And look, even in that situation, you know, you're an American company, the person's in Poland. What are the Polish authorities going to do that's going to affect you? To be honest, I don't know. But you know, it's not a great problem to have.
Okay. Got it. So that's for one person. Now, what about when you're starting to scale up? So, you know, maybe you're a US company and you've decided that, okay, I want to scale up as a remote first company. And so you're looking at hiring 20, 50 people around the world. What then, if you're hiring people on contract or employees?
So yeah, that's a great question. And the classic answer is it depends.
Of course.
Well, there's two schools of thought here, and it really depends on the type of remote company that you're building. And this is something that I personally wrestle with a lot is, you know, if I look at the way that some companies have grown, they've been very deliberate about where they hire. A great example is Shopify. So Shopify's support team has over 2,000 remote workers, and I think they're only in 4 or 5 global locations, but they're all remote, right? So they go, they said, oh, we need people in Asia Pacific. And then they said, okay, we're going to hire people in New Zealand. And they want to center it around, I think it's Wellington. I can't remember, but they picked a geographic location and they said, we're going to hire remote people in this region. And, you know, it's a clever model because it means they can focus their hiring efforts. They know how to support those people. They know sort of culturally and employment-wise what their expectations are and how to meet them.
Nice.
And so, you know, an employee model works well in that sort of scenario. But
because they maybe don't have a ton of different geographies that they need to support.
Exactly. And so that works, you know, if you're looking at a synchronous work style where you want people to be able to communicate easily with each other, you know, maybe you're hiring by sort of time zone, which would restrict your geographies. And, you know, it might be that you can identify clumps of talent for particular roles where it makes sense to go, okay, you know, there's a great bunch of software engineering talent in Nigeria. I think I can mine that for a while, you know, and I can meet my hiring needs just there. But if you're doing the, you know, asynchronous, we want to have a really diverse global population, we're going to hire from anyone from anywhere, then, which is what we tried to do with our business.
Okay.
And then doing that with an employment model, which is what we endorse, you know, because that's what we offer as a service, that can become a headache pretty quickly because, you know, you have a lot of different countries that you're going to rub up against in terms of trying to keep things consistent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not an easy choice to make, I think, but the best bit of advice I would give, I think, is that if you're planning to go the contractor model, then it helps to be a little thoughtful about the countries that you're going to go into and how they view that model and what their general sort of level of sophistication around tax and employment regulations are. You know, it's very different to, for example, engage a contractor in India or the Philippines than it is to engage one in France or Germany.
I see. Because it's a lot more sophisticated. They could be doing these audits, as you said, versus, you know, Philippines or India, where it's less likely that that's going to
happen. Yeah. Well, if you think about it from a, you know, you're in Canada, right? So you'd probably be a little more wary about doing it in Canada, where you have a corporate entity, where if there's some sort of investigation, you know, like they already know where you live, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they could track me down. They know
right. And then there are countries like you know, like the US, like France, like Germany, where this stuff is heavily regulated.
Mm-hmm. I see. Oh yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. On some ideas on how to consider, you know, going the contract, where to do the contracting model. So what about What about cost wise for contracting versus employee? And let's go with where the company has decided they want to become quite diverse, you know, and maybe if they have those 50 employees, they're open and having people in 20 different countries, you know, like very, very diverse, you know, and let's say they went with a company like Shield Geo or someone else who's going to manage the complexity for them. Like, let's talk about the differences. So like cost wise, I would assume, I don't know, because contractors would be expensive.
Contracting's much cheaper.
But like, contracting is much cheaper after all, because you don't have to pay for the benefits.
So it's interesting, right? If you think about the traditional contracting model, the way that it, you know, certainly the way that I grew up with it was that, you know, you could be a software engineer as a permanent employee, and you might make $100,000 US. If you were a contractor, mm-hmm. you know, you didn't get paid leave, you didn't get training, you know, you weren't invited to the Christmas party. So
that's a huge one. The Christmas party, yeah. So hard.
People take it badly. But
yeah, it's been 10 years for me. I've never really had a Christmas party. So I'm so glad we have one at my co-op. Otherwise, there's nothing.
Yeah, it's a terrible time of year to miss out. Typically people would then, you know, you get a markup, right? So you'd charge somewhere between 50 to, you know, 100% more, you know. So if you divided up the hourly rate as an employee, you might be on $50 an hour, but as a contractor, you'd charge, you know, $75, $100 or $125 an hour. You don't have as much job security, et cetera, et cetera, but the rate balances out. Now, the way that most remote companies are hiring is not based on that model. What they're saying is, we're going to pay you as a contractor, but we're going to give you paid leave. We're going to supply you with equipment. You know, we're going to give you all of the same benefits and treatment that we would give as an employee. And we're going to pay you an employee salary, but we're just going to pay it to you straight. And that, I mean, you know, there's a whole debate around whether you pay local salaries or whether you're paying salaries based on somewhere else. But in fact, the employee, the worker, depending on the country, the worker might actually be giving something up. They might not always be aware of it, or they might be getting more in their pocket, right? Because let's say they register as self-employed, or they set up their own personal services company. You know, maybe there are great incentives for them to do that. Maybe they don't have to pay employee social security, which might mean there's a lot more money in their pocket. It might also mean that because they're not paying employee security, social security, or because they're not having employer social security contributions made, they might be missing out on things like access to healthcare, public education,
oh my gosh,
pension and retirement.
Or if they get fired, they're not able to get employment insurance.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and
wow. It doesn't sound clear cut.
It's not clear cut. And
unfortunately, so
the one thing does make my, you know, where I do get a little passionate about is that there is an element of hiring contractors internationally where, particularly for, you know, for people in certain roles where they haven't, you know, where they don't necessarily know what they're getting into. And if you're, like, for example, in Australia, if you're a contractor, you know, I'm in Australia, if you're found to be a contractor, the penalty is an individual one. There's no penalty to the employer unless it was like a labor violation. The tax implication is on the individual, because if they say, oh, you've been pretending you're a contractor and you're you know, you're claiming all of these home office expenses, for example, but we think you're actually an employee because you've only got one source of income, then I can get hit with a tax bill.
Oh wow. Here in Canada, I think it's actually it's on the employer. It's the employer's onus.
Yeah. I think Canada's an interesting one as well, because they charge back penalties on social security and so on.
Yeah. So I'm trying to work through, is there a rule of thumb to help like an employer who really has identified someone really cool in Nigeria or Ukraine or in the UK that they want to hire, that they can kind of follow to decide if they should approach them as a contractor or as an employee through something like Shield Geo? Because I'm sure they do not want to go set up an entity for one, potentially just one.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I'm evaluating it, how long is it going to be? Yeah. So
because you said you have both.
If we're going into a new country and we're hiring our first person there, contract for 6 months is a great idea. You know, potentially, you know, depending on the country, you might be able to go even longer. You might be able to go up to sort of 12 months or longer. But that's typically one of the triggers, is how long has this arrangement been going on? So, you know, if we're trying to hire our first employee in Brazil, we'll say, look, can we engage you as a contractor? Let's just make sure that, you know, that we like you and you like us, and that the work is going well before we spin up all this machinery. So that's one. The other is, what other activities do we have in the country? So, you know, I might not really care if I have a, you know, difficult situation in Poland. It's not a place I regularly visit, but I would care if it was in...
Oh, so they won't stop you at the border and like take you aside and throw you in prison because of these tax violations. Well, you're
not going to go to Poland. I've heard it's a beautiful place, and I've met some lovely people from there. But you know, compared to, for example, the US, where first of all, it's a country I travel to a bit, and also we have a lot of business dealings there. So if we ran into any sort of difficulty, that's going to have an impact on us. So that's another one. And then I think also the level of just the general level of sophistication of that country in terms of, you know, like how sophisticated is the tax structure, you know, how aggressive is the government, that sort of stuff. I think that's it's a little harder to gauge, but that's also something that you sort of bear in mind.
That makes sense. So maybe to try to summarize it is, you know, if cost is say the biggest factor, you know, maybe try to go for a contractor in a place that maybe has a lower sophistication in their tax system, or for a place that maybe you don't care too much if there's going to be legal issues there for your organization, and then the inverse for places, if to maybe consider them as employees.
Yeah, and also I think it depends on your company as well, because, you know, like if you're a startup, you know, and we've come from that place, like, you know, this is not the top of your list of concerns, right? So if you've only got 6 months of runway, and if you don't succeed in 6 months, you're out of business, do you care that, you know, you might run into some issue around contracting in 2 years' time? I don't think you care.
Right. No, definitely not. You may not be alive then.
Yeah. And so the size of organization, I think, also plays a bit of a role there, in that, you know, typically you'll hit some sort of point where you'll be profitable enough, or you'll become risk averse enough, or you'll have some sort of bad experience that will make you care. Mm-hmm. And I know I've spoken to people who have been like, you know, I'm just going to go over this model. If it comes back to bite me, it comes back to bite me. And, you know, looking at it on balance, they've probably, like, it's probably been a good decision.
Going the consulting route, you mean?
Yeah, just pure contractors. You know, there's a bunch of, like, some of the more famous remote first companies, that's what they do, right? They have employees in their home country, and then all of their international staff are contractors. They've been doing it for, you know, 5-10 years. They haven't had any real difficulties, you know. Sorry. Yeah. So let's say the last thing is that I would make sure that the person gets good advice. So, you know, maybe help them get an accountant or encourage them to do that. And if you terminate them, do it on good terms.
I like it. Yeah. That way they don't go complain to the government and cost the organization tens of thousands of
dollars. It's just the right thing to do regardless, but particularly from a risk point of view in that scenario, you know, if you just say, like, you know, offer them a little extra, pay them a, you know, a gratuity to leave, like
gratuity to leave. I love that. Give them a tip to leave the organization, you know.
I mean, particularly if it's a smaller company, you know.
I just meant the word itself, for, you know, we call it stuff. But gratuity, you know, that's what we call tips here in Canada.
Yeah, we tend to call it a gratuity because we want to avoid any obligation associated with it. But, you know, particularly if it's a country where there is an expectation that there's going to be, you know, severance or notice.
Yeah.
It becomes a time where it's helpful to sort of understand some of those cultural norms and pay respect to them. Because, like, you know, if you take the example of you know, if it was someone in Canada and they know they're meant to get like 2 weeks notice, mm-hmm. and you say, okay, well, you know, we're terminating, you're going to finish today, but we're going to pay you out for 2 weeks. They're probably not going to feel super aggrieved at the payment side of it. Mm-hmm. If you say, hey, too bad, you're done tomorrow and we're not going to pay you anything.
Yeah.
They may feel aggrieved at the payment side. And, you know, is it worth saving the 2 weeks worth of salary? It's probably not.
Yeah, really. We're talking about what, a couple thousand max, probably, depending on how expensive this individual is. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Tim, this has been really helpful, I think, just to help at least, at the very least, me and hopefully lots of listeners on how to just process and think through just to put a little bit more thought into how you're going to engage, you know, these interesting people that you want to work for your organization, wherever they might be in the world. So thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having the conversation. It's, you know, I think it's fascinating to explore. And, you know, if anyone has any questions or counter views, you can always find me on Twitter. My Twitter name is Planet Burgess.
Planet Burgess, so Burgess.
Yeah, planet like the planet, Burgess, Burgess. And yeah, look, I really love the remote work, the whole ecosystem. And I particularly love hearing about companies who are employing internationally, you know, engaging international contractors. I think it's just a wonderful change in the world of work. And I think it builds better and more exciting companies. So happy to help anyone who needs it.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. And the website's shieldgeo.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right, Tim, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hey, I hope you make it to the school bus in time and have a great afternoon.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so everyone, thanks for listening. Until next time, from Tim and Jevin, have fun building those remote teams, paying them as contractors or employees, whatever you want. Cheers for now.
Hey, listeners, we're really trying to get the message out about how remote teams can be so awesome. If you found this podcast helpful, would you take 60 seconds to leave us a review in iTunes? It helps us rank to have more people learn about this show, and it helps us know which content is the most helpful. As a thank you, I'll try to read every review on the show and give you a shout out. Thanks a lot.